Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Tom Mikaitis is a terrorism expert and professor of history at DePaul University. We frequently call on for maybe a better understanding of international events like this. Tom, thanks for joining us again on WGN.
Good morning. Happy to do it.
So what do you want us to know first and foremost about what happened over the weekend?
Well, a couple of things. First, I don't think anyone is shedding tears that Maduro is out of power. The Venezuelans don't want him, the majority of them, the expat community doesn't, so on. What concerns everyone is the manner in which this was done, removing a head of state, now granted an illegitimate one. But I think more importantly now is what is the post-operation plan? If we're really committed to democracy, then the logical thing to do would be to take the woman who was the clear winner in the previous election, which was stolen from her, and appoint her as the, you know, allow her to take office as president. But the administration has said they don't want her. And there's speculation. One of the reasons they don't want her is she got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
And our president didn't.
Yeah. Even though she won the prize, she dedicated it to him.
There's no question she dedicated, she said and did all the right things, but the fact is it's not always logical, people aren't. The point is, whether or not that's the reason, the argument that, well, she doesn't have the respect, she won the election, okay, so that's the issue there. So the question is, are we going to get bogged down in some kind of protracted nation-building operation? The other concern I have is the impact of this on the international stage. How do we look Vladimir Putin in the eye and say, you cannot go in and conquer a country and remove the leader because you consider that he's illegitimate? Or what do we say to President Xi of China when he says, well, hell, you know, I can do the same thing to Taiwan. Why not? I mean, it's the same logic you're using should allow me to do the same thing. It sets a dangerous precedent. The other real concern is anyone who looks at this closely realizes Venezuela is not a major source of narcotics coming into the United States. The fentanyl's coming in from Mexico, a smaller amount coming in from China, and so on. One of the first things the president said in his press conference was, well, they took our oil. He's referring to the nationalization of the Venezuelan oil industry several decades ago. Well, that right away raises serious questions about what are the underlying motives of this. It clearly is not drug interdiction. Venezuela just is not a major player in that thing, and there's no clear evidence that Maduro is somehow the head of any kind of narco trafficking organization. He's a brutal dictator. I think everybody is happy that he's gone. The question is, what next?
I think it's one of those instances where it's easy to say the end justifies the means, so that this is a brutal dictator who, if he wasn't involved in drug trafficking, looked the other way. And the list of crimes that this man has almost certainly committed is long. So maybe it wasn't entirely legal or justified. Maybe we're using one excuse to accomplish something else. But if Maduro goes to jail, there's no problem with that, I think, for many people, Tom.
And that's a fair statement. I wouldn't entirely disagree with it, assuming, you know, he needs, of course, to get a fair trial. But it raises the question, why then does the administration go along with other people who are guilty of as much, if not worse? For example, the pardon.
Yeah.
The recent pardon of somebody, the support for Bolsonaro. There are plenty of authoritarian leaders around the world that we support. There's a remarkable inconsistency here. And as I said, the narcotics are not coming from Venezuela for the most part. The other real concern, and we're seeing it already, is the veiled, not so veiled threats to other countries. The indication that, well, will we go into Mexico and attack the cartels? Will there be regime change in Cuba, which Marco Rubio clearly wants? And then over the last day or so, we've got renewed threats about seizing Greenland and making it an American territory. This kind of bullying behavior is not sitting well with our allies, the other non-aligned nations in the region, and not with the international community either.
if they were playing the long game, it's really hard to square the pardon of the Honduran president. It just doesn't make any sense. If you are going to be so resolute in explaining to us that you need to cut the drug flow, then why do you release the guy who was putting thousands of tons and weapons onto the streets of this country? So I can't explain that to you. But I do want to go back to the notion that they stole from American companies, if not American oil, it's their oil, but American infrastructure. That does seem to be something that needed to be addressed better than it was. And it's one of the excuses the president used for this capture of Maduro. So can you talk a little bit about that? What did they, when they nationalized those oil companies, did that not steal from the ExxonMobils of the world?
Well, you'd have to go all the way back to the interwar period, which is a long time ago, that without the capital or the resources to exploit the oil, Venezuela needed to turn to these companies. The question, what a Venezuelan might have said, and certainly what the, you know, the previous Venezuelan the government that did it said is, but you also, you know, took an inordinate share of the profit from that oil prospecting and sale, and that you benefited more than you spent. And so, therefore, we have a right now to seize these assets and make certain that that the oil, you know, benefits the Venezuelan people. Now, under Chavez and Maduro, clearly it didn't do that. I'm not convinced it will continue to do that, that it will revert to doing that. And you're talking about something that, as I said, happened decades ago, and this isn't how you deal with it. So, I mean, arguments on that can be made any number of ways. And that's something that could be resolved without, you know, without, you know, doing an invasion of someone's country.
Maduro and his wife said they're not guilty. In fact, the judge cut him off a few times, as I understand it today, saying it's not your turn to talk. This isn't, you know, your opportunity to proclaim your innocence. You do get to make your plea, but that's all we need to hear from you today. Thank you very much. He's going to be tried in an American court, I guess, in New York City. My understanding is that what the administration has done over the weekend violates international law, but probably would withstand the muster in American law. And then the conundrum becomes that the president is supposed to uphold treaties that the country has signed, and we are on that UN charter, which says we would not do this. Having said all of that, what's your make or take on the legality of what happened over the weekend?
I think you summed it up pretty well, although I was listening to the list of charges, the fact that he has, you know, weapons, he was the head of state, he has an arm, you know, the armed forces. Some of it seems a little far-fetched. Some of it probably is valid, and he could be convicted. There is a precedent. We did this to Manuel Noriega in 1989 under George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. But even that, I don't think, went down terribly well. This does have a different feel to it. He might very well go to jail. I think what the international community is understandably concerned about is, you know, removing a head of state, you know, and so on. And like I said, I think a lot of the, you know, the irony of it is that I think the worst crimes he committed were committed against the Venezuelan people, not against the American people. As I said, the numbers just aren't there to support, you know, charges that he's the major exporter of fentanyl into the United States that's killing our young people. That's largely a, you know, largely a pretext in this case. And again, there's, you know, it's very interesting that we previously interdicted boats and boarded them, searched them, apprehended people if there was contraband on them, and blowing them out of the water and making sure there are no survivors, which we did with the two men clinging to the boat, raises really serious questions whether the evidence for those charges is really there. Now, like I said, the indictment goes all the way back to 2020. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident there are some things they'll be able to convict him on. I think some things they won't be, but it's quite likely he will go to jail. I'm a little perplexed by his wife. It's not clear to me what her role in all of this is. But again, you know, the real question is, okay, now you got his vice president. What are you going to do? Does she get to stay in power? Does the woman who was duly elected in the last election that was stolen, does she get to go? Do we have a new election? Who supervises it? Who runs the country? What do we do? Do we go in and occupy? Do we force them? I mean, you have Marco Rubio saying, "Well, no, we're going to coerce them. We're not going to govern them." Well, you know, coerce them for what? To do what we want, to govern and, you know, to secure our interests. That's looking more and more like, you know, colonialism, not like an effort to, you know, to restore democracy.
I have to say, when I was listening to the president speak here on this radio station over the weekend, I was just shocked when he said, and we are going to run the country. And until there is a judicious and safe return to power for some legitimate government in that country, those weren't the exact words, but that was the essence of it. And it was clearly a scripted line in his speech. While the president did ad-lib some of it, he went back to that statement a couple of times. And I thought that was just a remarkable idea. I get the idea that we'll blow up boats and we'll capture your guy and we'll bring him to justice. I believe that we would do that. I get my head around that. But that we're going to run Venezuela? What does that even mean? Now, since then, Marco Rubio and the president himself walked that back. But I can't understand why the disconnect then. How is it that that was in the speech and yet the next day they say we don't mean that? I can't understand that.
Well, because for one thing, the president doesn't stay on script. We don't know for a fact that it actually was in there.
It sounded like it was, but yeah, line. I don't have the transcript.
Yeah, it may
so
very well
have
been. The thing that shocked me, in addition to that comment, was all of this, these superlatives about this brilliant operation, the best military operation since World War II. Venezuela ranks 50th in the ranking of militaries in the world. We're number one. I mean, this was, you know, yes, it took planning. It was skillfully done. I'm glad nobody on our side died. I don't know how many on their side did.
40 plus, no.
But this was, yeah, but I mean, this was, you know, but anyway, yeah, I'm surprised he was that blatant. And when you pair that with the comments about oil, it literally threw out the moral pretext that was laid out as to why we were doing that. And then again, he was pushed by the reporters. And by the way, this is a very carefully selected reporter pool. We know that Carolyn Leavitt has made that happen. And even they were saying, what do you mean by that? Who's going to do it? Oh, well, Marco Rubio and Hegseth will be involved in all that. And then everybody's going, okay, this is looks like a rocket to Afghanistan. What is what's called the Phase 4 reconstruction plan? There is, as they say, you break it, you bought it. And that's essentially where we're at. Although right now there is still a functioning government in shape.
Well,
it's just there are so many questions we don't know.
Yeah and a president who campaigned on, and I think a lot of people would appreciate it if we would adhere to this, that we're not in the business of nation building. And yet here we are overthrowing one government, and now we have to prop up another one. And the history of that, with the exception maybe of Panama, is mixed at best. But I want you to comment on this, Tom. John, please ask Tom about Americans dying from drug overdoses every year that was shipped from Venezuela. That alone justifies our actions over the weekend. The next text says, John, they planned this for months. It doesn't have to do with Maduro dancing as he was on videos prior to this. He's a thug, a murderer, and an amoral person who's caused immense suffering to his people. If Trump would take over just to make money, I would not agree. But he wants to improve the situation for Venezuelans and prevent American drug deaths. Tom, just a moment ago, I read to you a couple of texts from listeners who say that the drug problem in this country, we need to get serious about it, and that's what the president's doing.
You know, while your break was going on, I went to the government accounting website. This is not Tom McCaitis, the liberal professor. This is the United States government, and I'm reading literally off it that 80% of this is coming through Mexico, is seized at the southern border of the U.S. So the idea that going after Venezuela, which contributes, if anything, a tiny amount of this, is going to have no impact on fatalities and drug use in the United States. I saw this happen. I was involved in studying Plan Colombia in the 1990s. The U.S. went in to break up the cartels in Colombia. Then the drug of concern was crack and cocaine. And what did we end up doing? We disrupted the Caribbean routes controlled by Dominican gangs, and we shoved the narco-trafficking up through the Central American corridor, where it still flows and is dominated by the Mexican drug cartels. So this, you know, I really do understand the question from your listener, but they have the wrong culprit.
How long?
And, you know, it's, Yeah.
I want to
now,
read
the other question.
Well, go ahead. Keep talking. Keep talking.
No, I see the other question. Yeah, he's a brutal dictator who has hurt his own people. And if the outcome of this, if the outcome of this is that you restore democracy and we get a government that is representative of the Venezuelan people, that governs in their interest, which might mean not they're controlling their own oil infrastructure, not us, then I'm willing to reassess what I'm saying. I'm just very, given what I have observed of foreign policy during the first year of the Trump administration, I don't see a lot of evidence of being concerned for local people. I see lots of evidence of trying to profit from foreign policy, not necessarily the president himself. He's very careful about that, but those around him and people
okay.
who support him and
the
so
The chatter
on.
About the oil really complicates this thing, but I think the...
It does, yeah.
But prior to that, like, oh, I don't know, Friday, it was all about blowing up little boats and maybe even sending a drone in because we're tired of watching these drugs come into the country. Even though a speedboat in the Caribbean off Venezuela is not the problem, it was a signal to the rest of the world, certainly Central America, that you're not going to get away with this anymore. So a couple of texts. How long has the war on drugs been going on in America and the United States? And what's been done about it? Only talk? Well, now action. And I've got several comments from listeners like that. They sort of like the strong hand that we're playing. I'll let you respond.
Well, you know, and I understand that. People like definitive action. But the question is, it's action for its own sake without demonstrable results isn't going to do anything. And we have not seen any evidence, and people have pushed the administration repeatedly, show us some kind of proof that those boats are actually carrying drugs. Because people may not realize there was strong action before. Prior to this beginning of these attacks in September of 2025, the Coast Guard routinely stopped, searched boats, seized cargo, and apprehended. And they could still do that. And then you're not killing anybody. So this was clearly seen. And I'm not the only one who says this. You have all across the political spectrum, you've had military and other experts raising serious questions. You know, there have been naval officers who have gone to not-for-profit legal advisory bodies to ask about the legality of blowing these boats up. They don't trust their own Judge Advocate General Corps because it's been gutted and put it in the people be replaced with, you know, people who will be supportive of these policies. But the military themselves are questioning this. There was the admiral in charge of this who resigned. So I'm not the only one who's raising this concern. These are people whom nobody's going to call liberal, who are saying, wait a second here, we did not need to do this. You know, something else has gone. And, you know, this operation was no surprise. It was known more than a month ago, we were moving military assets into Puerto Rico, particularly troops. And the only logical thing that the reason for doing that was for this kind of an operation.
And the president said, well, we're going to take a look at Mexico. He called out other locations as well. And that's a lot to think about. We're out of time today. That's Tom Mikaitis, a professor of history and expert on terrorism, among other things, at DePaul. It's nice to hear your voice again today, Tom. Thanks for helping us out.
Happy to do it. Happy New Year to you and everyone else.
Yes, Happy New Year.